Thank you very much, Tony, for your welcome this morning. I take your words as a compliment. I hope I'm right when you say I preach about subjects you've never heard preached about before. But I don't want to stretch it too far. I once heard a brief sermon on the verse, Og, the king of Bashan, had a bed that was 2 cubits long. I can't remember what the preacher got out of that. The title of today's sermon is Glimpses of God from Behind. And for those of you who are not English native speakers, and perhaps not so aware of the intricacies of the English language, the word glimpse, perhaps we'd say in German, ein kurzen Blick erhaschen, to see something very briefly and then it's gone. And I take up for this sermon the text that we just heard from the book of Exodus. A text which is both strange and at the same time fascinating. But as they say on television, we first have the story so far, so you know where we're at. We're probably all familiar with the story of Moses getting the Ten Commandments on the mountain, and then coming down to the people and finding them dancing round the golden calf. Moses is totally angry and throws the tablets down so that they smash. And the passage that we heard carries on from there. Moses is disappointed and frustrated. And he asks himself the question, where do we go from here? I'm supposed to be leading this people, but I have no idea what to do with them. And God says to Moses, carry on with your journey to the promised land. Moses is uncertain about the difficulty of the challenge ahead and is on the point of giving up. And he says to God, perhaps in our words, if I'm going to carry on, I need to be absolutely sure that you're with me. Where do we come into this story, you might ask? We're probably not expected to lead a fickle number of people to a destination that seems well out of their reach. Although after I wrote that line, I thought perhaps of the trainer of Hannover 96 or another football team who are perhaps overcome by the impossibility of the task. Or perhaps if you're a teacher, you might know that situation, or even in your family. But mostly, the problems that we have are more personal, not responsible for others, but how are we going to carry on? When we think now about the rising numbers of corona cases and we think of the coming winter, we might ask ourselves, how am I going to cope? Or perhaps we've lost somebody close to us and we can't imagine what life will be carrying on. Perhaps our employment situation is insecure. Or perhaps we're coming up for retirement and we don't quite know how we're going to manage. Perhaps you've got your own example of where you look into the future and have that sinking feeling inside and think that you're not going to cope. If you can, then you can identify with Moses in this story. We would probably react in a similar way to him. God, if I'm supposed to carry on, I need to be really sure that you're with me. At this point in the Old Testament story, I think God probably suppresses a sigh. It doesn't say that in the text, but I can imagine it. Thinking to himself, how many more signs does Moses want? We've had the burning bush. We've had the 10 plagues of Egypt, We've had the Red Sea parting in the middle. We've had the pillar of fire by night and cloud by day. What more is he asking for? But Moses, in spite of all of these signs, is still not satisfied. I need to be really sure. Just show me your face, and then it will be okay. I think at this point, again, we can feel with him when we're overwhelmed with worries about the future. We can find countless verses in the Bible saying, "Do not be afraid, I will be with you." But is that sufficient for us? Do we relax and carry on? Mostly not. Similar to Moses, we might say, in the light of the difficulty lying ahead, I need to experience you in a way that is unambiguous and undeniable. But it's interesting to hear how God responds to this. Comes the verse, "No one can see me and live." Perhaps he's saying, "Do you really know what you're asking for? If I revealed myself to you as I really am, you wouldn't survive it. I am so much other than you are that none of the words you use to describe me get anywhere near the reality of who I am. I'm certainly not the kind of being that you can pull out of the hat every time you need me. I'm not an emergency doctor that can be called on to come round when you are feeling some need of help. And your hymns that you sing underline this. We sang just now, "Holy, Holy, Holy." Or the other well-known hymn, "Immortal, invisible, God only wise. In light inaccessible, hid from our eyes." Do you have any idea what you're asking? Sometimes I think we have become too familiar with God or with our idea of him. And we perhaps also need to hear these words, "I am a holy God, not at your beck and call." This thought fills me with great humility every time I'm asked to preach a sermon. Who am I to say to people what God is or who he is or what he's saying to us? And I think perhaps we could think twice before we take the name of God lightly on our lips, as though we understand what we're talking about. Sometimes it's better to be silent than to speak about things we don't really understand. And when we ask God for help, when we ask God for a totally clear experience of him, do we really know what we're asking? In spite of all that, God still wants to help Moses. He understands the need and offers an interesting solution. He says, "There is a safe place near me that you can stand in. It's in the cleft of a rock. If you stand there, I will protect you with my hand over your face so you can't see me. I will pass by, and when I take my hand away, you can see me from behind." The Authorized Version translates rather sweetly, "Thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shall not be seen." That's where I got the title, "Glimpses of God from Behind." What sort of glimpses of God from behind do you think we can expect now? Perhaps not so spectacular as the story with Moses, but I find there are at least three ways in which we can glimpse God from behind in our daily lives. The first way is to glimpse God in nature. There's a wonderful poem by a Welsh poet, R.S. Thomas, called "The Bright Field." He looks back here upon a glimpse of God. I have seen the sun break through to illuminate a small field for a while and gone my way and forgotten it. But that was the pearl of great price, the one field that had the treasure in it. He didn't notice it at the time, but only realized it when he was looking back. I remember a similar experience some years ago, traveling with my wife in Morocco and seeing the Atlas Mountains in the distance with the sun shining on them. At the time, I was briefly moved by the sheer beauty of it, but soon forgot about it because we were on our way to Marrakesh, a city full of interesting things to see and do. 2 years later, when I was taking part in a seminar on spirituality, we were given the exercise to think of something nice that we'd experienced and to dwell on it for 5 or 10 minutes. And somehow this experience in Morocco came into my head, and I said, I'll take that in and re-experience it. And amazingly, the beauty of this experience came back again, much stronger than the first time, and I realized how beautiful it was. We don't have to wait 2 years, perhaps, to glimpse back upon God. There is a spiritual exercise, one of the Ignatian exercises, which encourages us every evening to sit down and think back over the past day. Was there anything special I experienced today? And then to dwell on it. Let it sink in. Let it spread out inside. Perhaps a glimpse of God from behind. Glimpsing God in nature. And the second point is glimpsing God in others, in other people. The New Testament describes God in such a way as he can be seen, his face can be seen in the person of Jesus. During his lifetime, people are healed and challenged by Jesus and fascinated by him, but they're generally not overcome by his presence. This changes after the resurrection. Instead of clear sightings, there are sometimes only brief glimpses. And in the reading, we heard how 2 disciples on the road to Emmaus had such an encounter with Jesus. They thought that the stranger who had joined them was just an erudite Jew with whom they could discuss the events of the last few days. It was only when he broke bread with them that they realized who he was. And in that moment, he was gone. A glimpse of the resurrected Jesus. I believe it's possible for us today to glimpse Jesus in the people that we have to do with day by day. But we often don't do that because we have such a set idea of what these people are. Think perhaps of a friend, a partner, a casual acquaintance, or someone else you've had contact with this last week. How do you see this person? How do you think about him or her? Mostly we have a pretty clear image of the people around us. And certainly if it's our life partner, we tend to think we know who they are and we know what they're going to say next. We're sometimes wrong. They say familiarity breeds contempt. Perhaps that's a bit strong, but familiarity leads to the fact that we miss these brief glimpses of God in the people that we meet. We don't expect anything new from them, let alone the possibility that they might be an incarnation of Jesus for us today. Perhaps we can open our minds in the coming week for the possibility that Jesus or God will show himself through a smile of another person, through a word that they say, through something that surprises us, something, a brief moment, which is perhaps important for what we need in our daily life. Glimpses of God through nature, glimpses of God in other people. And finally, I pause at this word, finally. My father was a Baptist minister, and my brothers and I knew that when the word finally came in the sermon, we still had at least a quarter of an hour to go. I promise you, it won't be that long. The third point, a glimpse of God, something that we can do for that is to find a quiet and safe place. God showed Moses a place where he could stand and prepare himself for an encounter with God. There is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock. The rock is a very firm, secure place. I will put you in the cleft of a rock, a safe place where God can meet him. He protects Moses' eyes with his hand as he passes him by, and only removes his hand when the danger is past. Perhaps you have a place like this in your daily life, a favorite armchair that you sit in for a bit of peace and quiet at some times in the day. Perhaps a corner of your bedroom where you have a candle that you light up, a cushion that you can sit on to meditate, a place you can be still and wait. Or perhaps you prefer to be outside. You've got your own secret place in the woods or by a stream. Somewhere you can be safe. Somewhere you can go to and wait for a glimpse of God. If you don't have such a place, I can only recommend that you find one. Or if your lives are so full and your space is so limited, to take time to create a space inside you. Creating a place inside, a secure place, a place in which God can speak to us. Perhaps you'd like to do this inwardly now, and when I finish my sermon and we heard the music from our Iranian friends, that you can be taken inwardly, perhaps not to Iran, but to the mountain where Moses was, and imagine this place where you can sit and be secure, knowing that God is holding you in his hands. You can breathe easily and let this space widen out inside you. And take then the image, the cleft of a rock. Perhaps we can't experience that outwardly, but inwardly we know there's a place where we can be, where God accepts us as we are, and perhaps sometimes, just sometimes, we have a glimpse of him, or perhaps hear his words, in spite of your worries and your fears of what's to come. I really am with you, and I will not leave you alone. Amen.